Golic and Wingo with you on a Monday morning. ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo. Yes.
So this is the, again, if those who may not know, the last week of Golic and Wingo. Our last show was Friday, and also the last week, and Friday will be the last day of my 22 years starting morning radio on ESPN Radio. So, and I'm beginning really, really nice tweets about it. I really appreciate that, everybody. But then there are some that just make me feel so old. This one from...
Even though they're trying to be nice.
No, they are. This person is being nice. And I don't know their name or I'd say it because their Twitter handle is Josh Allen and Pete Alonso Save New York. So
hey, listen, Josh and Pete, love you, man.
A worthy outcry.
There you go. But he says, paper route at 14, then before high school workouts, all through college, and even on this deployment, all my days have always had ESPN Golic. So, number one, thank you for your service, as you say, on this deployment. And thank you for listening for all those years. But, oh my gosh, 14, then high school workouts and college now on deployment.
Shout out to like so an actual paper route, too. I feel like that vocation doesn't get nearly the love it used to. Like, the paper route used to be like the rite of passage job
and
the
lead
up for so many people. You rarely hear that in the origin story anymore. Good on the paper route.
I'm with you.
Well, you know, the web sort of took that down a little bit. But I was a paper boy. Were you a paper boy?
No, I was never a paper boy.
You were a paper boy?
No.
We also did
But man, that kid riding through the neighborhood just throwing the papers, that's awesome stuff.
Always trying to hit the window with the guy that never gave you the right tip.
Get it right. Oh, you were a vengeful paper boy.
Yes, you were.
I kept score.
Remember like an elephant.
The paper boy remembers.
I kept $2. I want my $2.
That is awesome. But thank you very much for that, too. That's very, very nice. I feel old, but that's very, very cool.
You know what's the better or how am I saying this? It's better to feel old than not feel anything, if you know what I mean. So getting old beats the alternative.
There you go.
That's what I always say.
Figured that's where you were going.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, one way or another, you got there. The ramp up was a little bit Fred Flintstone, but you got there eventually.
I was still doing my Magic City research at the same time. I was cross-pollinating.
I figured it was a tweet or Magic City or something going into that, though.
But by the way, they've taken down the reservation because I didn't give them a credit card.
Oh, okay.
So my card is empty at Magic City in
there
the
you
VIP
go.
Room again.
Probably
again, I could book it.
Probably for the best in that situation that you don't have a reservation there. I could see that charge going through on your card and your wife having very interesting questions.
Oh, it was the ESPN card.
We're gonna get to that one in a little bit and what research we had to do to make sure we were getting. Hey, it's all about research and getting your information.
Listen, and I feel bad like that. I don't have the source material on this one because I've never actually been to Magic City in this, and so I can't give you guys a lot of field research on the wings or anything like that, but we'll give you the best report we possibly can on that. In the meantime, I guess a little thing did happen in the NFL over the course of this weekend. Dad, I remember talking to you. We were at dinner. We were eating dinner Saturday night, and I brought this up to you, and it had slipped in undercover for you just because you're a little less active on Twitter than I am in this situation. But Jamal Adams finally getting what he wanted and getting dealt to the Seattle Seahawks.
And so when you hear Jamal Adams got traded, and we had Mike Tannenbaum on here earlier, former obviously GM and president of a couple of teams, who said the one downside of this is what happens when a player basically stamps his feet and yells and gets his way and gets to leave. What does that set a precedent? So we'll see down the road for that. But when I first heard he got traded, the next was, okay, this is a guy that tried to get out of there. What did they get for him? Well, they got two first rounders, a third rounder, and a player. And what went back, or that's what the Jets got, and Seattle got a fourth rounder, and obviously Jamal Adams in this one. So we have seen other players. We saw Khalil Mack go for two first rounders. We saw Jalen Ramsey go for two first rounders. We saw Laremy Tunsil go for two first rounders. So Jamal Adams does the same, and he will strike it incredibly rich because there was no deal done, and they traded him for two first rounders. So he's got all the leverage in the world once that happens.
Of all those that you mentioned, Mack was the only one that had the deal,
deal done. It's exactly right.
Tunsil didn't get the deal done, and Jalen Ramsey didn't get the deal done.
Yep, exactly.
And at that time, we know Tunsil did since.
Yes.
Right. Well, and to the point about that Mike made about is this setting a bad precedent for players going forward, what's the precedent? If you're worth two first-round picks and our organization is so in such a place where things are disgruntled enough to where our best players don't even want to be here, then yes, you might find your way out of this. Show me the players that are going to be able to meet both of those criteria. criteria on a regular basis. Now, if you're the Jets, your worry should be, we haven't kept many of our first-round picks around lately. We haven't been doing a good enough job scouting them, and we certainly haven't done well enough on the field to create an environment that people want to be in, and that is the much larger concern than any precedent you did or didn't set.
You're 100% correct, because from 2008 to 2019, Jamal Adams was the only first-round pick of the Jets that either was a first-team All-Pro or went to multiple Pro Bowls. Obviously, 2020 hasn't happened yet because they haven't played, so that's a bad sign from your drafting going forward. So let's break this down from both sides. What does this mean for the Jets not giving away because they got a ton back in return, but letting your best player basically bleep his way out of a situation where he didn't want to be in? Here's Manish Mehta, New York Daily News, on Game Night with ESPN Radio. And remember, he had the large sit-down interview with Jamal that really led to the straw that broke the camel's back here and in getting that trade to Seattle.
I have talked to communicated with a good chunk of the people that matter in that locker room, and they're not happy, and you wouldn't expect them to be happy. When you lose the engine of your team, you know, your leader, your two-time team MVP, the only All-Pro that you have on this team, your best player. When you lose that guy a few days before training camp begins, about 5 or 6 weeks before the regular season begins, that doesn't play well in the locker room, because they don't care about 2021 draft picks or 2022 draft picks. Taking Jamal Adams out of the equation from a football perspective does not make the Jets better. The Jets took a step backwards in 2020, and that's all that players care about.
You know, we talk about them losing them, but going to your point, Mike, I think the more important question is why. What's going wrong there? What's the situation there that this guy, it wasn't even about pay me. It was about, I want out. I want out.
Well, it started with
money.
Pay.
Just like Jalen Ramsey started with money as well.
Correct.
And then it was, I want out of there. Now just get me out of there. So I think that's what players are looking at. So wait a minute, you do this to our best player. You know, just dust them and get rid of them like that. Though they did get a big windfall back.
And Kimberly Martin, one of our great NFL reporters, aggregated a bunch of tweets from former Jets linebacker Darren Lee that were echoing a similar sentiment, because Le'Veon Bell was pretty outspoken on Twitter and went back and forth with Jamal Adams, you know, subtweeting him at first, basically saying people make all this noise to get you here and then switch up and change a different tune. Once you're here, kind of going back and forth, him clearly upset that this guy who was probably a part of recruiting him to New York all of a sudden is saying these things about his employers and all this one. But Darren Lee comes out here with the tweets and basically said, Jets Nation Todd Bowles was right. And when someone asked what was he right about, and said the last text he sent me was, watch your back, the last text I got from him, meaning Todd Bowles. So indicating that all things don't seem well under the hood there necessarily, which is the much bigger concern.
Listen, we've seen guys trade down in Miami when Gase was down there that were disgruntled. They were gone, right?
Yep.
They were traded away.
Jay was traded to a Super Bowl winning
team. So we see it happening here again. And from the other side of it, from the Jets, listen, you're going to pay a premium at a position. You feel like you're going to be paying Sam Darnold at some point. And the other premium positions, let's be honest, are your left tackle, maybe your right tackle too, depending on how you want to go about it, but your tackles, your pass rushers, and your corners. Safety doesn't fit in that mold, right? So maybe the thought process was, well, we'd like to pay. Listen, they got to find those players first, which is something they have struggled mightily with, finding those core players at those payable positions, and they're going to put their eggs in that basket and not have to pay a guy who is the best in his position or right in the team picture of the best, but a large, large sum of money.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you got to pay what you got. And we saw that happen in Carolina with Christian McCaffrey, who is, you know, one of the best, if not the best, at his position there. But they're at a spot there where they're not sure what's going to happen. They've got a quarterback on a much team-friendlier deal for at least the next 3 years while they can grade that spot. And the money's got to go somewhere at some point. And so Carolina decided, all right, well, we've got a great player. Let's play and keep him around. You're right. The Jets have to factor in what's going to happen in the most important position on the field. Are we going to be dealing with a coaching change there? Have we seen enough from Sam Darnold to start sniffing a long-term deal? They've got too many questions to now sink cost into this spot when you could have change in all these other areas that are going to affect winning and losing much more than a safety is going to at this point, and that's the unfortunate reality.
All right, so that you mentioned winning and losing and how a safety sort of deals with that. The other side of the equation is Seattle, what they gave up. They gave up two first-rounders and a third-rounder to get Jamal, as well as a fourth-round pick. Here's our Bill Barnwell now, who does a great job breaking down these trades and evaluating things, basically saying what Seattle has done with this trade and what they need to do to justify it.
They've got to win the Super Bowl. I mean, I think when you make this sort of trade, when you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson in his prime, it's no different from the Texans trading for Laremy Tunsil or the Rams trading for Jalen Ramsey. When you get this sort of haul, two first-round picks, what you're saying is we're going to win a Super Bowl over the next couple of years. This is the guy that's going to put us over the top to do that. And it hasn't happened for the Texans with Tunsil. It hasn't happened for the Rams with Ramsey. Obviously, still very early in those guys' careers with their new teams, but they have not gotten much further than they did without those guys. So when you get Jamal Adams, you have a quarterback in Russell Wilson who's in the prime of his career, and you have a coach, by the way, in Pete Carroll, who's in his late 60s, who's closer to the end of his career than the start of it, very clearly. You know, this could be the Seahawks saying, hey, you know, we want to win one while we still have Pete Carroll in here. So to me, I think no one questions Jamal Adams as a football player, but just when you're trading this level of draft capital for a safety, a position that the league does not really value at the same level as a left tackle or a wide receiver or a cornerback or a pass rusher, which is where these trades have come up in the past, you have to be saying, hey, we're going to win a Super Bowl, and Jamal Adams is going to be a defensive player of the year candidate in that Super Bowl season. That's a pretty tough ask.
I mean, when you spell it out that way, it does make it look like they spent a lot of capital on something. No one is debating that Jamal Adams is one of the best at what he does in the NFL. That is not in question here. The question is the value that they gave up for the position that he plays going to make the difference for a team that was in the postseason a year ago and came within the last play of the last game of having home field advantage in the NFC?
Well, there's two sides to this one. One is putting all that on a safety.
Yeah.
I think that is difficult. I completely understand that. And that's also a team that has seen the Richard Shermans, the Cam Chancellors, the Brandon Browners, the Byron Maxwells all be fourth, fifth, or not drafted rounds that Pete Carroll has done a great job. Remember, Pete Carroll was a DB coach, then a defensive coordinator, and then a head coach. He has made guys that weren't taught. Now, Earl Thomas was a first-round pick for them, and he's a great player in Baltimore now, no doubt about it. But those other guys, he has made a great secondary with them. So I guess the thought could be, do you want to spend all the money you're going to spend? You're going to spend $65 to $75 million on a four-year deal for him. That's basically what you're going to have to spend. They have the cap money to do that if they want to do it now, but you're going to spend big on that. So is a safety worth that? The other side of that, who's a threat to them in the West? Who was in the Super Bowl last year? San Francisco, not only in their conference, but in their division. And who went to the Super Bowl? Who they play and who they lose to? Kansas City. What? Those are the one and two, whatever you already want to put in, best tight ends in the league. So if you want to say you're going to spend all that money to have Jamal Adams be, because he's more on the line guy, you know, more on that line. He can cover, but he's more on that line.
We've gotten to see that through what has been a great byproduct of the Jamal Adams trade, which is the heat maps
the
of
heat
NFL
map
player
of,
position
of yes. where he lines up, but he can come in and can have a say in George Kittle. Right? You can have a say in Travis Kelce if those are the two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. So if he can have a say in those, the two of the top teams were there, then you're going to say it's going to be worth it. You're going to say that he has to win a Super Bowl again. Is he going to be the reason you win a Super Bowl? Well, if he actually can do a job, it's not to say that's all those offenses have, but if he can not stop but slow down those tight ends, you're going to sit there and say, okay, that was worth doing if it puts us in a better position.
Well, especially for San Fran, because really if we're talking about the weight class in that division, we're waiting to see if the Rams can get back to where they were.
Right.
And they got great production out of the tight end position last year as well down the stretch.
And again, if we have the playoffs and we get to the playoffs this year, it would be expanded playoffs. And last year, the Rams would have been the seventh seed
right.
in the NFC.
But it's still, everyone's looking at that as it's 1-2 in that division
right.
are San Fran and the Seahawks.
Right. Correct.
Without question. And Seahawks are always going to get an unbelievable amount of credit because of Russell Wilson.
Right.
They have by far the best quarterback in that division. It's not even close for second, to be quite honest. But you look at that situation and say, the Niners, who are the best team in that division,
right.
also make their living with a dynamic run game that takes place because you've got Kittle and Juszczyk that can do such different things. And that's where Jamal Adams definitely has the biggest influence, is the way that he defends that portion and the way you can attack their creative run game. It's how creative you're willing to be with Jamal Adams and how much you can count on him being as productive as a pass rusher year over year in that, because defense is hard to hold in that, because Culture-wise, he's a perfect fit. Like, he is a Seahawks defender.
Yes, he is.
The way he carries and conducts himself based off what we've seen in the Carroll era. That's no doubt.
No doubt about that. So, again, it's just a heavy price to pay for one player, and specifically a player that isn't a quarterback, protecting a quarterback, or receiving the ball from a quarterback.
But if you've got your quarterback, a player like this can be a force multiplier. It's just, will Brian Schottenheimer finally let Russell Wilson be the main reason you win games? Are they going to ditch all this run-first stuff that ultimately holds back the best thing about your football team? Every other team that we've mentioned, sans Deshaun Watson in Houston, has so much further to go towards being a team contending for a Super Bowl than Seattle does in this situation. All those other teams we've talking about have been dealing with quarterbacks that are question marks at best, being kindest in those situations. The Seahawks don't have that. They have a Hall of Fame answer there.
Right.
And so if that offense gets going, this can be a force multiplier that does win you a Super Bowl.
And we'll see what happens when they get to the first week of the season. Meanwhile, we're getting closer and closer to the resumption of the end of the regular season in the NBA, and a lot of controversy about Lou Williams of the Clippers, who left the bubble for an excused absence, and then one of his friends, thanks, guy, posted a picture of him at Magic City, which is a gentleman's establishment in Atlanta. And, of course, apparently they have tremendous wings there.
Yes,
and
yes.
Went for the food. But he's facing a 10-day quarantine, whereas Zion Williamson, who was also outside the bubble and came back, was only facing a 4-day quarantine. We had Kendrick Perkins on with us earlier today, and we asked him whether or not it was fair that Lou Williams is getting 10 days quarantine, and Zion is only getting 4, and he said yes.
Yes, it's fair. I mean, listen, Lou has to be more responsible. You're looking at a guy that's, you know, a 15, 16-year vet, you know, and during this pandemic time and then, you know, leaving the bubble, you know, I understand he had a family emergency, but he has to be more responsible. I get it, you know, going to Magic City for the wings or whatever, although I think he went for the legs and thighs. But at the end of the day, you have a young guy like Zion Williamson who left for a family emergency, and he handled it more maturely than Lou will. We didn't hear anything from Zion. He went and took care of his business, and now he's back to the bubble. Well, here it is. You see Lou will in Magic City, and it's kind of disturbing because the NBA has did a great job going forward for dealing with the pandemic, getting this bubble together. And they tested 0 cases out of 362 people. And now Lou going to Magic City and then trying to come back to the bubble is putting everybody at a higher risk. So he should be penalized. He should have to quarantine for 2 weeks to make sure that everyone is safe because it was just irresponsible on his part.
Do you agree? Do you think it was irresponsible? I do think there is, we talk about, especially we talked about this outside the bubble, baseball, football, and then in college around their campuses and around the college town, of the responsibility that's going to be on the player. In the NBA and WNBA, for that fact, it's about in the bubble and the responsibility to follow the guidelines in the bubble. And when you're allowed to go outside the bubble, one of the things they do, Zion was tested every day outside the bubble, and Lou Williams was tested every day outside the bubble, and they tested negative for all of those. So if there are no other guidelines of you shouldn't go to a restaurant or a nightclub or whatever, sans that, do we just say, well, that was irresponsible, and because somebody snapped a picture of you there, we feel we have to come down on it, even though this isn't a punishment, air quotes, that they're saying. I guess the question is, if he tested negative every single day outside the bubble and Zion did, why is he being quarantined for 10 days and Zion for 4?
I would say if there's less definition, my cry would be don't give him a reason, right? Like, that's the one thing you're looking at
that's
in all
fair.
This is not to give them a reason
right. I would
to
agree
quarantine
with that.
You for any longer, because this is done out of a place of safety. Like, the people making this decisions are in part the health experts, I believe, in the NBA. And so this is done for the reason of trying to protect what they've worked so hard to build. And from that, I can understand, like, you can't put the league in that position. And I think that's what it ultimately boils down to.
I think I agree with that. I mean,
optics matter.
Ultimately, I do think it was an irresponsible move for him to go do that. But you can say irresponsible, but then you can also say, should he have gotten more of a quarantine than Zion for it?
Well, because he didn't put the league in that position, like the public nature of it. Like, you still let someone snap a picture. Like, you were there, and you had an idea of, like, hey, there could have been as simple as don't post that in situation. Like, yeah, you're right. Technically getting more time for getting caught in this situation, but look at from the NBA standpoint. What would you expect them to do? If this came out and the NBA did nothing different in all this, people would look at them and say, well, how strict is your protocol? How much are you protecting guys? Yeah. And so I just think it's one of those situations. We don't have to condemn Lou Williams. Like,
no.
we're not sitting here and going to rake him over the coals for this. He did test negative. He's going to come back and operate by the rules. But in this situation, with so much at stake in a short timeline for a roster that's already going to be without a few guys that are all, you know, dealing with their things that might not have their full complement going into this, this is something you got to be a little more diligent about.
Do we think a new memo comes out from the NBA now addressing this? Two players, if you're excused and are allowed to go outside the bubble. Like, the NFL has laid it down.
Yeah.
They have laid down specifically nightclubs. This, right?
Yeah. I mean, this would have gotten Lou. This, I mean, if Lou was an NFL player and did this, this would have gotten him that they could have not paid him. I mean, that's basically.
But only if he tested positive.
Right.
Only if he tested positive. Remember, Lou didn't test positive. That's the biggest difference.
Yes.
So I wonder if something will come out now in a memo to the NBA of players saying, listen, you know, you may conduct yourselves a little differently, you know, if you're on an excused absence outside the bubble.
And you figure guys would have gotten that after someone got 10 days of quarantine for picking up takeout that was coming there.
Just wasn't we would all agree wasn't the smartest move in the world by Lou Williams.
It wasn't the smartest move. Isn't the end of the world in this situation. No. And for the Clippers, they're good enough to absorb this at the beginning.
Right. And more importantly, friend, don't take my picture. Really. More important than anything else.
Well, we asked that question, and when dude stepped over the food line, we asked, what food is worth it? Yeah. Well, we found out with Lou Williams what food is worth it.
And based on some of the reviews that we have read about these rings and some tweets that I've gotten in this, seems like they fall into that category.
People love the wings.
They do.
And Kendrick Perkins mentioned some other things. Golic and Wingo reminding you, don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. Coming up after the big move and the big trade, is it really Super Bowl or bust in Seattle? We'll get insight into that after this. Well, this is the thing that taunts you, right? Like, when you were on vacation, just so you know, your son was here. Now, without giving away where you live, you don't live in what's called a major thoroughfare.
No.
This is an offshoot of an offshoot of an offshoot.
Right.
I think there are like four houses on your street.
It's a hard spot to find unless you're the ice cream man.
Exactly. And the ice cream truck came by your house knowing full well that if I just play the music outside the Golic house, it's like a Pavlovian dog. They come out sour.
Can I just say, Mike, what happened yesterday afternoon?
Ice cream truck rolled out in front of the house.
Who went running out?
My sister and her fiance, Ben.
Yep.
I rolled down.
Sprinting. Sprinting. This is a 26 and 25-year-old sprinting to the ice cream truck.
The best part is the 30-year-old was on his way over in the car. I pulled up while the transaction was happening in the cul-de-sac here, and I rolled down my window. I looked and snapped at my sister ready to give her my order, and she just looks at me nonverbal, thumbs up, I got you. Like, instant telepathy of knowing exactly what your boy needed there. Years of teamwork in the making.
What I don't know is what may have happened while... Now, Ben, again, tight end in the NFL, large human being, and my daughter running to the truck. I'm waiting to hear the complaints from the neighbors of them knocking kids out of the way to get to the front of the line.
Listen, any port in a storm,
you do
what you got to do. So the ice cream truck is the gift that keeps on giving for the Golic family.
Yep.
It is Jamal Adams, the gift that they expect to give them a lot in Seattle for what they gave up for him. So with that in mind, did they give up too much? Delighted to be joined by our next guest, NFL insider extraordinaire Field Minister Yates. Field, two number ones for a safety. Good idea or not?
You know, Trey, I like the idea of when we're evaluating a trade, who got the best player in the deal as the quote-unquote winner. But I do think it's really interesting how different the tenor has been in evaluating the Jamal Adams trade as compared to evaluating the Laramie Tunsil trade, for example. Because it's not the exact same deal. There are more parts involved in the Miami-Houston deal, but the basic trade of a star player for two firsts is the same. I love Jamal Adams as a player. Anybody who tells you they don't is either an angry Jets fan or a 49ers/Cardinals/Los Angeles Rams fan right now. But two first-round picks, and let's be clear, we project those first-round picks probably to be somewhere in the 20 28 range, maybe even 32 range. So two late first round picks for a player that plays a position that, if you just look at the top of the market of safety, has not been valued at the same level as a pass rusher or a wide receiver. Of course, a quarterback, a left tackle. The NFL has not quite valued a safety like it has some of these other spots on the roster. So I think it is a bold and audacious move by the Seahawks, but I also am okay with a team that has Russell Wilson as its quarterback, that has a very competitive, I would argue the most competitive division, doing something that dramatically increases their chances to win right away. And the Seahawks now have an identity defensively that I think was sort of cemented with the addition of Jamal Adams.
From a financial standpoint, Field, if they don't do a extension now and wait till next year, how much more does it cost them because of waiting?
Well, I do think it has a chance to cost them if he does exactly what he wants them to, or what they want him to do, right, Mike? It's like, yeah, you know, you've got the potential for him to be just an average player, which I don't think that's going to happen. He's a back-to-back first-team All-Pro. But if he continues to play on his current trajectory, then I do think next year we're talking about Jamal Adams resetting the safety market in a major way. But I think that's a problem that Seattle would be okay with having. It would sort of further justify the trade. And if we look at Seattle and their history in recent years, they have not been afraid of resetting the market for position-specific contracts. Quarterback, they recently did so with Russell Wilson until Patrick Mahomes went and got $500 million. They did so with Bobby Wagner, who surpassed C.J. Mosley for the highest paid inside linebacker in football. They have not been afraid to do that. So I do think that a year probably will end up in a more player-favorable deal versus a team-favorable deal. But if you're the Seahawks, that means that you've gotten what you wanted out of Jamal Adams. And maybe a year from now, we're talking about him as the first ever $16 million per year safety, or something that's well above where other guys like Kevin Byard and Tyrann Mathieu and the other elite safeties in the NFL are currently at.
Field Yates with us here on Golic and Wingo. Field, does this put them out of the market with their toxic relationship with their ex Jadeveon Clowney? Are they finally priced out of a point where Jadeveon Clowney could be wearing a Seahawks uniform in 2020?
I think if he does come back, it would have to be on a one-year deal. And it would have to be on Clowney saying to himself, I really do care about the chance to win. Because if we look at the economics going forward, if you're making a multi-year commitment to Jadeveon Clowney and you're Seattle, over the weekend we learned that the cap could drop as low as $175 million. No lower, but that's as low as it could go, which would be a $23.2 million drop from where it is this year. And if you look at recent trends, we've been seeing this cap increase somewhere around $10 to $12 million per season. So you already have Russell Wilson, who, again, is making second most money of any quarterback in football. Jamal Adams is going to need a new deal a year from right now. You've got other players that either are due for a raise or would be extension eligible a year from now. Chris Carson is an example of a guy who's going to be a free agent amongst other players. That I think if Clowney comes back, it would have to be a one-year arrangement, or most likely be a one-year arrangement, and probably an arrangement that is fairly team-friendly, which maybe that's what Clowney has boxed himself into right now anyways, given that it's July 27th and he hasn't yet signed with any team. And that's probably the case for a lot of these remaining free agents. And there is a very good list of free agents still available, but I think a lot of them are taking prove-it type deals, are taking flyers, or they're going somewhere where money matters and winning may not matter to them. They're taking the biggest check they can get, which, by the way, no issue with that. But it may be that they're going from a team that was competing at a high level annually to a team that has a chance to go 6-10 this year.
With that in mind, Field, looking at that list, and there's some interesting names out there, Everson Griffin surprises me. Why do you think he's still there?
I think a lot of the guys that are still at still available right now had hopes of a multi-year deal, maybe not at the top of the market, but certainly in a very respectable range at their position. So Everson Griffin is sitting there saying to himself, all right, so if, for example, you've got guys who are taking deals this offseason, we didn't see a ton of pass rushers get paid in free agency, but still, we're seeing guys as pass rushers making $15, $18, $20 million per year. I deserve that kind of money, don't I? If you look at my track record, you look at my production, you look at how I played this past season after, you know, obviously a very interesting and uncommon 2018, Everson Griffin bounced back in a major way this past season. It's probably his last bite at the apple. So I think that most of these players are simply waiting for a long-term deal that never arrives. And at this point, they're having to just sort of weigh themselves, all right, where am I going to go on probably a shorter-term arrangement, understanding that not only is it a shorter and probably less lucrative deal than I wanted, but also, like, how does COVID impact my life? Do I want to go somewhere that is different for me? Do I want to put, if you've got a family, do you want to potentially be away from your family for 5 months or however long your season lasts? So I think that the dynamics that players are dealing with right now are, I certainly hope, once in a lifetime. And along those lines, some of these free agents are going to have to probably take deals that they would have never imagined, say, January 1st of this past year.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly all that has changed. Field, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Guys, you're the best. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
you
Field.
You got it.
Because that's part of it as well, right? The salary cap. Now, remember, the owners were talking about fixing everything in 1 year, but in this deal that is going to be signed probably today, it's going to be over the next 4 years, and the salary cap is $198 million this year. The floor of it can only go to $175 million next year. It can be higher
right.
next year, but it can only go down to $175 as they try and build it back up over the next few years.
But the cap is such a false cap. I mean, that's what I love about it. There's a great article right now on ESPN.com. Adam Teicher writes how the Chiefs went from $177 below the cap to those deals for Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones. I mean, it is moving money and
yes, it is.
Making things appear to what they aren't at its absolute best. And that's what the best teams
so
find a way to manipulate
do.
That.
Yeah,
they exactly. find a way to manipulate the cap. It is a really good read. I suggest you check it out.
The more you smile, the better mood you're in, the happier you're going to be, the better your life.
Don't need something that long to make me smile. That's all I'm saying.
What?
Yeah.
Thank you, Clifford.
That wasn't for you.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Hearing it back now, do you wonder how you thought that rim shot was yours?
Yeah. No, it was all mine all the way.
Uh-huh. You keep thinking that, Hal.
You just keep thinking, Butch. That's what you're good at. One of the greatest lines in the history of movies.
Golic and Wingo brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backaches, strains, sprains, or even arthritis. And there's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink.
Golic and Wingo here with you. Maybe that's all Justin Verlander needs. He's got some forearm tenderness. Put some Blue Emu on
Boy,
there.
That
pain
would be
relief,
nice, huh?
Wouldn't that be like, guys? It was just a little bruise. We're good.
That's
we
that FIFA Blue magic Emu spray.
Yeah, the water.
Mark, no, the spray bomber they come out with. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Well, it's funny. Our former colleague Mark Schott used to always laugh at the World Cup. Just throw some of that magic World Cup water, and I wouldn't need those 29 surgeries.
That's it. That's all, baby.
Fill the water, you feel good. But there are real concerns about Justin Verlander, one of many pitchers, Mike, that we've seen over the first few days of baseball come up lame, and we're talking big time names.
Well, we saw Corey Kluber from the Rangers had a stiff shoulder after one inning. We saw Clayton Kershaw never even have his first start. We saw because of a back nerve injury in the right hand of Steven Strasburg, he didn't make his start either. And then Justin Verlander, what's odd there? He pitched six innings, yeah. gave up two runs, three hits, and then all of a sudden, one of the first reports was he's done for the season.
With an elbow.
So then it turns out Dusty Baker said no, it was stiffness in the forearm. Maybe a couple of weeks, maybe longer. Justin Verlander took to his own Twitter feed and basically said, hey, the reports of all year, come on, stop, you know. And so, but we'll see in a couple of weeks. We'll see if anything leads to that. But we have that. We have the Kluber shoulder. We have the Clayton Kershaw back, the hand of Strasburg. I mean, some big-time pitchers for big-time teams – that are already right out of the gate in the shortened season, you know, hobbling a little bit.
Yeah, specific to Verlander, Jeff Passan was on SportsCenter last night and talked about, well, it might not be the elbow and it might not be the season. There's still enough here to be concerned about.
Anytime you hear the words forearm strain, it goes right back to the elbow because the muscles that are in the forearm, the flexor pronator and three other muscles in there, are connected to the elbow ligaments and, well, those things tend not to go well when you have a forearm strain. Now, that being said, a forearm strain itself does not mean that Justin Verlander is going to need Tommy John surgery or that he's going to need surgery at all. Typically, they'll give it a couple of weeks rest to see what the elbow looks like and what the muscles in the forearm look like, and then reassess there whether it's prophylactic treatment like a platelet-rich plasma injection or stem cells or something along those lines. You got to wait and see how the injury heals over these next couple of weeks before you figure out how to treat it and what the course of action is.
And considering Jeff Passan literally wrote the book, The Arm, I'd say he knows a thing or two about this process. But, Dad, in conjunction with all those other injuries you mentioned, and what we've seen with the Marlins, who had a rash of positive tests, four positive tests that caused them to delay their trip home, how big are your concerns starting to be about the viability of these non-bubble sports, baseball the first of which we've really seen in this country?
I don't think I'm hitting the panic button yet, even though it seems like maybe somebody should. Because you have a taxi squad, right? They have a lot of players that are available to step in, whether it be for injury, whether it be for positive COVID tests. Now we see how the plan works. Now that 100-page memo or the protocols or the guidelines that all the different sports have, they're great when nothing happens. They just sit there. But now when things happen, now how do the guidelines work? We saw in the bubble, a guy steps over the imaginary line to pick up some food. Boom, 10 days.
Yep.
We see guidelines put into practical application with Lou Williams going outside and Zion Williams going outside. So now what happens here? So these four for the Marlins, they get separated from everybody else. Does that stop the spread? They'll continue to test. Will it be just those four? Will we get more? Will they contain those four? Will other guys come fill their spot from the taxi squad? So how do the protocols and the guidelines work now? That's what this is all about. That's why you set them all up for, as it was Bill Parcells. That's why you lifted all them damn weights, right? That's why we wrote that 113-page manual. What happens now that it's in front of us? How do our protocols work?
Yeah, and honestly, Jeff Passan's going to join us a little bit later. We'll talk more about the spate of injuries, and I'm really curious about what's going on with the Marlins situation. Because if you're baseball and if you're football trying to start, I think – from the world we're all living in right now, what's going on with the Marlins right now has got to be the most concerning thing.
Well, but Dad, I think the point you brought up is probably the best one. As we said this, which is when the players first got to the NBA and WNBA bubbles, was it's how well you're able to address problems. And when Juan Soto tested positive the day after playing in a scrimmage, the NBA, MLB's contact tracing program said, all right, well, he didn't come into contact with any other players directly. It's how much do those things come up? They had the Reds had an infielder that test positive the day after playing in a game. The contact tracing program is again going to be a part of that. How their testing protocol adjusts to this now and how players adjust to, all right, these are the situations we know that we were in and we came back with positive tests. How do we adjust to avoid those going forward if this season something we're going to try and make successful?
It's all about the protocols. Look at the NFL, what they're about to start. Players report tomorrow. How it's starting is the first few days are for testing. And then the next couple days after that are for physical. So you'll find out after the testing who's positive. You know there's going to be some positives, right? These guys are coming from all over the place. There's going, just like when the rookies reported, I think when nine teams rookies are reported, there were like nine positives. There's going to be positives.
And those are the ones we expect.
Exactly. So what happens then? They're isolated. Do you get a rash of others in there? As you go through more tests, remember, first 2 weeks, every single day in the NFL, after the 2 weeks, if it's below 5%, it goes to every other day. If it's above 5%, it's going to continue every day. So I'm not sure what directions that's going to go, but these protocols and guidelines are all about what ifs when it happens. And we know they're going to happen.
They do, but that becomes the precarious part in itself, especially if it's going to keep happening as they go along in the season and you can't stem that, is at what point do the players start to become concerned? Because the real results side of this, like Eduardo Rodriguez, the Red Sox pitcher, who was held out for a week because of heart inflammation that they believe to be connected to his recent bout with COVID-19. Like, if you start to get things where it's not just, all right, positive test, you sit out, if there starts to become some of the real repercussions that we don't know as much about, how long are players going to be comfortable if that becomes more of a real risk they've got to cope with?
And that's the thing that people should focus on that they're just glossing over, because a lot of people are like, well, what's the death rate? No, it's not just the death rate with the virus. It's the long-term effects that are happening to people in sports who are young and healthy that we don't know enough about right now that should be as concerning as anything else that goes on with this virus.
And if nothing else from a sports side, for their ability to look at risking, all right, this one year of my career where this might be possible, to preserving the longevity.
Exactly right. So, again, coming up next, a big weekend in the Big Apple and why a healthy Giancarlo Stanton is indeed gigantic news for the World Series favorites, or one of them. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.